Wonder now if you would take out the insert I put in your worship bulletin today. I was supposed to give this two Sundays ago, but I was predisposed and couldn't be here to do that. And this is a follow-up on trying to look at the facts as they appear to us in the Bible. And this series of topics, we'll call them sermons, really came out of the Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's movie. And so many people coming and saying, well, is this correct? Is that correct? And the most important thing that we can do is to know factually what is in the Bible. When you hear programs on television or you have someone teaching, it's always good to go back to the Bible and check out exactly what they are saying. And as you know, with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they do not all portray the gospel in the same way. And so what we have been doing is trying to harmonize the Gospels. We've taken Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and looked at all four of these and tried to bring them together. And I've given you kind of a check sheet here to do that. Now, the first time that we did this, we actually saw the arrest of Jesus in the garden all the way up to the time that he was crucified. Then the next Sunday, we looked at that awful day on which he was crucified. And now we're going to look at the third part in this series. We're going to look at the time that he was taken down from the cross and put in the tomb. And as you can see, I put Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John at the upper right-hand column. And then I've gone down and taken the important facts on the left-hand side of the column, and I've checkmarked. Now, the very interesting thing for us to do is that as we go through this, I would like for you to see what all four of them agree on. Because the gospel writers are seeking to do something here that's going to become evident when you look at this. When you see all of those checks going straight across, and this is something that's very important that all three of these Gospels wanted to have in their Gospel. Now, you know that Mark was probably the first Gospel that was written, and we believe that Mark was a traveling companion of the Apostle Paul. We also believe that Mark actually left his signature on his Gospel. If you read in the Garden of Gethsemane, you will find the statement there that a young boy that was in that garden lost his clothes and he ran away from there naked. And people believe that was actually Mark telling on himself that happened there in the garden. And so they say that is the one gospel where the gospel writer actually put his signature on there because he told something about himself. So that would show us that Mark was just a young boy at the time. And later on he became the traveling companion of the Apostle Peter. And then, remember, we talked about the oral period. You remember that? That a lot of this stuff was not written down. And the reason why it was not written down, the things that Jesus did, why? Because they believed that the Messiah was coming. They believed that Jesus was coming in their lifetime. And then, as some of the eyewitnesses began to die out and were gone, when Peter and Paul were executed there in Rome, that early Christian community said, you know, we better start writing this down. And so they went from an oral period into a written period, and that's when these Gospels began to be written. And so Mark was the earliest one. It's the shortest one. It's often been called a business person's Gospel. Get it out as fast as you can, almost a newspaper Gospel. Get it out as fast as you can. Then we have Matthew, and Matthew is one of the apostles. And Matthew was named Levi, and given the name Matthew by Jesus, and he was a tax collector. And Matthew, he's writing a Gospel, and he's aiming it at who? He's aiming it at the Hebrews, at the Jews. Jesus was the fulfillment of all the Old Testament, Matthew is saying, and so he writes his gospel. Then we come to Luke, and Luke probably was the third gospel that was written. And what about Luke? Who is Luke? He is the beloved physician. He is the traveling companion of Paul. We think maybe he was converted under the ministry of Paul sometime. And then the very last gospel is the Gospel of John. I told you last time that gospel probably was not written until about AD 100. And interesting enough, the Gospel of John was really not accepted by the church in almost AD 150. Now, when you read the Gospel of John, it's way out here. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're way over here. And they seem to contradict one another, and there's no contradiction in the Scriptures. When you bring them together, they're like a symphony. They're like a harmony. And when someone does what I am doing today, it's called harmonizing the Gospels. And that's what we are doing. We are taking Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the various ways they looked at this that took place in their lifetime, and they put it together, And that makes the overall gospel. We got little gospels, and then we've got the gospel. Okay? Now, today, I've entitled this, The Man Who Took Jesus Down from the Cross. The Man Who Took Jesus Down from the Cross. Many people would comment on this and give it the heading, The Man Who Put Jesus in the Tomb. To me, the most important thing that happened here, yes, the tomb, the most important thing that happened here in the life of this one man was Jesus being taken down from the cross. Now, here we're going to meet someone today that you have never met before and that you will never meet again. The only time he is ever mentioned is right here in the Gospels at the time of Jesus' death. And his name is what? Joseph of Arimathea. Joseph of Arimathea. All four of the Gospels, this is important, all four of the Gospels are going to tell you that the person who took Jesus Christ down from the cross was Joseph of Arimathea. They all say that. Now, Luke, as you see there, he says it a little different. He says he was from the Jewish town of Arimathea. This is so ridiculous with regard to this movie that's out that's saying that the movie is biased towards the Jews. They were all Jews. Do you know that everyone who wrote the book of the New Testament, except for Luke and Acts, were Jews? Do you know that? Every book that we have in the Bible was written by a Jew. We have two Jews now who are taking Jesus, who was a Jew, down from the cross. So these are all Jews. So we should never refer back to him and say, the Jews did this, the Jews did that. The leaders of the Jews did this. Or Caiaphas, who was hated by the Jews, by the way, did these things. But we never refer back and say, the Jews did these things. And so here we have the gospel writers saying that there were two men. Joseph of Arimathea, later on we'll see Nicodemus. Joseph of Arimathea, who took the body of Jesus down from the cross. All four gospels say it was Joseph of Arimathea. I'm belaboring this point because it's very important. They're pointing to him and they're saying he is the one who took the body down. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now the reason why they're going to do this is because they are going to make the claim, this is going to be the core preaching of that early church, is that Jesus Christ did what? That's so unbelievable. That's what they're going to say, that he did what? What happened to Jesus Christ? He was resurrected. Now, we just take that in stride today. But here they're saying, here was a dead man, and he was physically, bodily, spiritually, emotionally, down to his last DNA molecule, he was raised from the dead. How preposterous is that? What if somebody came up and told you that somebody was actually raised from the dead? Would you be a little skeptical? These four gospel writers are saying, I don't care what anybody else says, we can take you to the person who took his dead body down from the cross. It is Joseph of Arimathea. They're pointing to him, Joseph of Arimathea. Now, what are the personals that we know about Joseph of Arimathea? How does she crawl all the way underneath that chair, Melody? Here are the personals about Joseph of Arimathea. First of all, Matthew says he's what? He's loaded. He's rich. He's wealthy. He's got a lot of money. And we're told this by the gospel writer Matthew. We're also told by Matthew that he is what? He is a disciple of Jesus. Do you know the difference between disciple and apostle? We got 12 apostles. We got a lot of disciples. So if you were a follower of Jesus, you would be a disciple. When the apostles go out and they start their ministry after Jesus' death, they will also have disciples. The difference between an apostle and a disciple, if you look in the book of Acts, you will find that the apostles and the disciples of Jesus met in the upper room. And when they met in the upper room, someone said, you know, we got to replace Judas. Jesus chose 12 apostles. Judas is no longer here. He is away from us. We have to select another apostle. But what's the criteria for an apostle? You know what they say? They said he had to be there when Jesus was baptized in the River Jordan. And he had to be with us all the time that Jesus ascended into heaven. He has to be able to witness the resurrection. And they had two men, Barsabbas and Matthias. And how did they choose between the two of them? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. How did they do this? They cast what? They cast lots. And who was the 12th apostle? It was Matthias. He became the 12th apostle. And that's the way apostle. Now, there was only one other person that claimed he was an apostle. Who was that? Come on, you all know this. Yeah, Paul. On the road to Damascus, he had this experience, and he said, well, Jesus came and called me to be apostle. And there were people for the rest of his life saying, no, 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 you were not an apostle. And Paul always maintained that he was an apostle. So here you have Joseph of Arimathea. He's not an apostle. He is a disciple. And disciples are followers of someone. It's kind of a general term as opposed to an apostle. Now, what do we hear from Mark as to what, John, as to what kind of a disciple he was? Yeah, he was a secret disciple. Very important. He's a secret disciple. So you have disciples that follow Jesus openly, and they go out, and here you have this secret disciple. So here you have Joseph of Arimathea. He's a disciple, but he's a secret disciple. One of the Gospels say he was afraid. John says he's afraid of the Jews. He was afraid of the religious leaders of that time. So here you have a rich man, and here you have him a disciple of Jesus, but a very tantalizing bit of evidence, he is a secret disciple of Jesus. Now, Mark also tells us that he is a respected member of the council. The council there, you can write in, is the Sanhedrin. S-A-N-H-E-R-E-D-R-I-N. Let me do that again. S-A-N-H-E-D-R-I-N. It's the Sanhedrin. Luke is going to tell us that he was just a member of the council. Do you know what the Sanhedrin is? This is the Congress of the Jews in that area. They would appoint representatives to go to the Sanhedrin. And it was there at the Sanhedrin. It was almost like the Supreme Court, senators, representatives in America, all the parliament all put together. Now, unfortunately, the person who heads this up is Caiaphas. He's the high priest. And so you have a lot of people in this who have various degrees of how they see the world and everything, but Caiaphas is the one who runs the Sanhedrin. And what happened when Jesus was arrested, where did he go? He went to the Sanhedrin, and he went to Caiaphas, who was heading up the Sanhedrin. So here we have Joseph of Arimathea. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. Now, we think Arimathea was a little town that was kind of in the hills out in Judea. It was kind of northwest of Jerusalem. So this man was so highly thought of that he was elected to be a part of the great Sanhedrin that met there in Jerusalem. We're also told by Mark and Luke that he was looking for the kingdom of God. How many of us look for the kingdom of God? I think you're all seekers. I think you're all looking for the kingdom of God. I think that's what our spiritual journey is. We're looking for the kingdom of God. We're looking for truth. We're looking for what makes sense. We're looking for meaning. We're looking for purpose in our lives. And more specifically here, Joseph of Arimathea was looking for the Messiah to come again and usher in the kingdom of God, where there'll be no more wars. There'll be no more injury. There'll be no more crying and gnashing of teeth. You know, there'll be that peace which passes all understanding. And you cannot say that about Caiaphas, that he was looking for the kingdom of God. He found what he believed to be his kingdom. But here you have a person who was looking for the kingdom of God, and two of the gospel writers tell us about that. Luke also says that he was what? He was good and righteous man. Righteous means that you stand up for what is right. That's what's being righteous. We have this meaning that's kind of holier than thou. You know, he is a righteous man, holier than thou. It doesn't mean that at all. It means you stand up for what is right. That you see something in life that's not correct, and you do all that you can to correct it. That's what Joseph of Arimathea was. He was a man who stood up for what was right. Now, those are all the personals about Joseph of Arimathea. Then we come down to his actions. When Jesus was brought to the Sanhedrin that night, and they had this mockery of a trial, he was the one who cast the no vote. Now, I put that in there, but we really don't know whether he was there at all. Many scholars point out that they think that this court in the Sanhedrin was just a kangaroo court. It was done early in the morning, and many of the people who belonged to the Sanhedrin were not even notified to come to this council meeting. Now, the gospel writer here of Luke says he did not consent to this. That does not mean that he stood up and said, this isn't right and I vote against it. It may be that later on in reflection that he was always there saying, this isn't right. Maybe he learned of the plan that Caiaphas had put together with regard to Judas and betraying Jesus, and he did not approve of that. We don't know. All we know here is that he did not consent to doing this. Again, we don't know that he showed up and stood up and gave a tremendous speech and said, we cannot do this, and was voted down. Perhaps not. But it's a statement here that the people in the Sanhedrin, they did not always follow the things that Caiaphas wanted them to do. And then we got another 4Xer here, or a 4 check marker here. He sought the permission from Pilate to take Jesus down from the cross. All 4 of the Gospels will tell you that. Why? Pilate was the one who had the authority to take the body down from the cross. Now, we talked last time about the Jews in Deuteronomy were told that you bury a person the day that they die. This is the day of preparation. This is the Friday before Sabbath. Sabbath is going to start Friday night, and it goes until when? Saturday night, 6 to 6. Okay? The only person that could give the authority to take a body down from the cross was the governor, which was Pilate. It also shows here the power that Joseph of Arimathea has, because he can go right to the governor and get an audience right away. So Joseph of Arimathea is a powerful, well-connected, respected person in that community that even the governor respects. So he goes to Pilate, and he says that he wants the body to be taken down because of Jewish customs. What is Pilate's reaction? Pilate cannot believe that Jesus is dead already. I mean, he just had this trial a few hours before. There's no way he could have died already. So what does Pilate do? Pilate sends his guards back out to check on whether Jesus is dead. And because they want to bury all of the 3 who were crucified, what do they do to the other 2 to hasten their death? They break their legs. Can you imagine this God-awful scene? Can you imagine that? Suffering on the cross, and they go up in some hideous way and break their legs, and the trauma of that kills them? Horrible. Horrible. And then what do they do with Jesus? Show that he's dead. Spear in his side, and you have the plasma, you have the water and the blood flow out, and he's dead. Horrible. They come back, and they tell Pilate what has taken place, and Pilate gives the release to do this. Now, Pilate, in other occasions, has done this. The Romans will do this. The Romans usually will let the body rot upon the cross because it's a deterrent to anybody else who would go against Roman authority. But in this case, a lot of cases, they will let family take the body down. But what is Pilate making sure of? That the family does not take down somebody who's still alive. And so he gives the authority. So here you have a man greatly respected and powerful in the community, Joseph of Arimathea. He goes to Pilate, and Pilate's the only one who has authority to do this. He does this. And why did all the gospel writers put this in there? It's another evidence that what? That Jesus Christ was dead. Now, my friends, they're going to go out and make this preposterous statement to the world that this man was resurrected. And they're going to say, well, if that tomb was empty, it was only because 2 things. Either he was not dead and he walked away or carried away, or the disciples stole his body. And so they're building their case here. Joseph of Arimathea, you can go talk to him. He's the one who carried this lifeless body down from the cross. And you can go, if you want to do that, and talk with Pilate, or everybody knows that story. Pilate went out, and he's the official here. He has the final authority. He better make sure this job is done. He checked, and sure enough, Jesus was dead. Joseph of Arimathea took the body down. And now they're saying Pilate was the one who said he was dead. We also learned there from Gospel of John that Nicodemus also shows up. We met Nicodemus only 1 other time. That was in the early part of the Gospel of John. And Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night. He's a wise man, respected man. And they get in talking about how do you get born again. And out of that conversation that Nicodemus had with Jesus comes that great John 3:16 and 17. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not die but have everlasting life. And the Father sent the Son in the world not to condemn the world, but that through him the world might be saved. So here you have Nicodemus, who met Jesus at night, and we don't know, was he a disciple? We don't know. Was he a secret disciple? Maybe. Joseph of Arimathea, Nicodemus, we don't know whether Nicodemus what kind of member he was of the Sanhedrin. Maybe they were, maybe they sit together. Maybe they were the only reasonable thinking people in all the Sanhedrin. But both of these men are going to show up at this time. Another time, straight X's all the way across, they took the body down. They all say that. They took the body down. Joseph of Arimathea was the one who did it. Pilate was the one who said he was dead. And Joseph of Arimathea, now we get another witness here, and Nicodemus, respected men, they were the ones who took the lifeless body down. They're making the case that Jesus was truly dead. Next we have on the next page, they wrap the body. Here you have four check marks again. And you have clean linen shroud. You have a linen shroud. You have strips of linen with spices here. And they all attest to some degree of preparing the body. It's interesting to note that Nicodemus, basically they're providing a funeral service here. That's what this is a funeral service. And Nicodemus brings myrrh and aloes. And the reason why they use these perfumes, so to speak, is to keep the stench down from the decaying body. And they would do that. Now, it's interesting to note here that Jesus' father was Joseph. And Joseph could not be there for his son, but another Joseph was. It's also interesting to note here that what did the wise men bring to Jesus as a baby? They brought myrrh. And here Nicodemus now is bringing myrrh to this funeral. I've often wondered whether this was the same myrrh that was given to Jesus when he was a baby that Mary had kept. For some reason, she had kept it. And the other thing that's interesting to note here, what did they wrap the baby Jesus in? Swaddling clothes. And these strips of linen are also called swaddling cloths. Swaddling cloths here. Now, there is no contradiction in the scriptures here. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they talk about this shroud. There is no word in Greek for shroud. It's more of a long sheet that they would just wrap the body in. The strips of cloth could also have been ways in which they would strap the cloth or the shroud to the body. But if we stop and think, everyone at that funeral was covered in blood. Horrible thought, but they were. You can just imagine taking the terrible, emaciated, beaten, scourged body of Jesus Christ down from the cross. It was going to be a bloody thing. Now, whether Nicodemus and Joseph had their servants there and did that, I don't think so. I think they did it. And here they are not only trying to prepare the body hastily to be buried, but they're also trying to deal with the blood that's on their clothing and also on their hands, innocent blood, not guilty blood, on there. And so they bring Jesus there, and some say this about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We believe that Jesus was hung on the cross at 12 noon, and he died at 3 p.m. And that it probably took about an hour for Joseph of Arimathea to go to Pilate to check that the bodies are dead. And probably this all took place maybe in 4 hours. Now, there is a man named Gordon that at the end of the 1800s, he found a garden real close to Calvary. And there was, after they dug some 6 feet down, they found this tomb that was hollowed out. And so all of that, we believe, probably took about 2 hours. And they were under the time there because the Sabbath was coming on at 6 p.m. And they could not do any of this or they would be unclean in order to keep the Sabbath. So they were hurrying with this funeral service. And so they wrapped him in the swaddling clothes. They wrapped him in the shroud. They had these myrrh and these aloes there that was kind of a perfume. And the women, we're going to see a little bit, were standing off. You see, they were standing off. And after the Sabbath, then they would come back, and that's when we have the glorious Easter, when they came back to prepare the body. Now, the next thing you're going to see is this word tomb here. The word tomb. You see all 4 check marks on tomb. Again, they are making their case. He died. He was prepared. It was a funeral service. And he was buried in the tomb. Now, they describe the tomb in four different ways here, and I have it for you. Now, the interesting thing here, just interesting things, because Jesus was a criminal, the Jewish law forbade any criminal to be buried with the other family members. So if you were a criminal, you had to have a burial all by yourself, or you had to be with another criminal. It would appear that this was Joseph Arimathea's tomb, that it had never been used, that it was carved out of this large stone, and that this probably was where Joseph of Arimathea wanted to be buried. He lived in Arimathea, but some say he may have even moved to Jerusalem. I think it's this kind of, he wanted to be close to the Holy Temple, and I think that's where, in a garden there, he had his own tomb. But even putting Jesus in there, if he left Jesus in there, nobody else was going to be buried there. And in these tombs, a lot of people would be buried. Why do you think Jesus, when he called Lazarus from the tomb, why do you think he said Lazarus? He said Lazarus because if he said come out, everybody in those tombs would have...